Although the month of June is deemed National Turkey Lovers Month, November commonly receives more attention for turkey with the Thanksgiving holiday. Today we're going to focus on the bird that Benjamin Franklin once called a bird of courage and a true original native of America. How's it going, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Rural Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Albrecht with Egg Country Farm Credit Services, and I'm pleased to be joined today by Carl Wittenberg, who not only serves as the chairman of the National Turkey Federation, but also has the pleasure of raising two turkeys that will receive an official presidential pardon. Welcome to the podcast, Carl.
Thank you, Adam.
Now, as we just mentioned, two turkeys from your flock near Alexandria, Minnesota, will receive a pardon from the president. Just a little background for those unfamiliar with this tradition. It began in 1947, and only since 1989 with President Ronald Reagan have the birds officially been pardoned. How does this selection process work for picking which operation will supply the birds?
So what we did is started a flock of 80 turkeys on June 29th, and my wife Charlene and I have collaborated with our local 4-H chapters in Douglas County. So we gathered them with the Science of Ag project that occurred in the winter months in spring, and introduced them and taught them the turkey industry through a Science of Ag STEM project. So we placed the turkeys here at a residence in Alexandria, Minnesota on June 29th, and we've basically cared for them with food and water and nutrition, and kind of acclimated them to people and their surroundings with music playing and lots of activity, with the 4-H students coming to visit them regularly. My wife Charlene and I and our children interacted with them as well. So what you're doing is really acclimating the turkeys to people and noises and sounds.
In terms of the process of having your operation picked, I'm guessing it was pretty competitive nationwide. I'm sure there are other turkey operations that would love to have those two turkeys that are going to go to Washington, D.C. How did you get selected?
So how you get selected is through your chairmanship as the National Turkey Federation industry. So back in 2008, I had to run for the executive committee. You have a board with a peer group of about 50 people who listen to your willingness to represent our National Turkey Federation on the executive board. And it's selection by vote. And so I was elected to become a member of the National Turkey Federation Executive Committee. So that was in 2008, which I knew then it's a 10-year position. And eventually you become an officer of the NTF Executive Committee. And that became apparent in 2015 as treasurer for myself. Then I was elected vice chair in 2016 and now chairman of 2017. So my tenure is 1 year as chairman from February to February. And within that year, you get to take the turkeys to the White House.
It has to be a big honor to have turkeys from your personal flock go to the White House. Could you just talk about this?
It really is an honor because at the end, it's an American tradition. We've got the 70th annual event coming up. And as you said earlier in your podcast, this started with President Truman in 1947. So if you think of the history and the number of presidents and the most powerful individual in the world, and you're going to meet him in his house, the White House, it's just a tremendous opportunity.
Now, you've said you've had the turkeys since June. When do you start to identify some of the final two? Because they haven't been picked out, correct? You've kind of narrowed it down. When do you start to do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we did have a flock of 80 turkeys started. We currently are down to 7 males and 2 females in the presidential flock that we're trying to choose them. And you're looking for the posture, the gait, the stance, how the turkey presents itself on a table, its characteristics towards people and individuals and noise, and it really has been a fun process. But yes, we have narrowed it down. We have 9 remaining turkeys. We believe there's 3 or 4 males that we're looking at right now to take to the White House.
And of course, these turkeys are going to live the rest of their lives in a kind of a petting zoo type environment, correct?
That's been tradition, correct. Yes, they're aligned usually with a university or a zoo or a park or something of that nature to live out their useful life.
This kind of seems to me like when you bring an animal to a state fair, those animals, of course, are treated a little bit differently, kind of babied and nurtured a little bit differently than your typical livestock. Is that a pretty fair comparison?
That's a great analogy. Yes. If you think of 4-H again and showmanship and showing an animal in an arena or a local county fair or state fair or national for that matter, yes, it's really a showmanship of animals.
Now, of course, you mentioned a little bit about the 4-H involvement. Could you just kind of expand upon that? What exactly is their total involvement like? How much time commitment is it from their end?
Yeah, again, back to the science of ag has been around within the 4-H family the past 3 years. So we formed a Douglas County Science of Ag team, and they compete in an arena called Science, Technology, Engineering, or MAP, which is an acronym called STEM. So as Douglas County is the birthplace of 4-H for the state of Minnesota, we thought it was a natural to create the team, form a project, which we started in March, and we ran through June. And they had a statewide competition at the University of Minnesota in June, the STEM team, and then they took second place with the state, and their involvement through the Science of Ag STEM program was probably 2 to 3 times a week. They were involved in pen trials of testing certain bedding supplies that we use in the turkey industry. So that was their project, and it was specific to corn stover. So taking the corn stalks from the field, chopping them up real fine, and using that as a bedding or litter source for our turkey industry. So that was phase one. Phase two was the placement of the presidential flock. And again, that occurred June 29th. And that's been more of a stair-step approach. The girls weren't that active initially. And as we've gotten closer to the White House, they've been active 3 to 4 times a week, coming to visit the flock and intermingling with the turkeys.
I'm guessing they're pretty excited to meet the President of the United States.
Yeah, they've become really excited. So we've had plenty of interviews here in the last month, and you can just see the expression on the girls' face. And I keep referring to girls, and everyone needs to know out there listening, there's no males on the STEM team. These are 5 4-H girls locally that are juniors and seniors in high school.
Have you figured out how you're going to get 2 live birds through TSA yet?
I believe we have. So, yeah, we call him the Turkey Whisperer. There's a gentleman in the industry that's assisted in taking the turkeys to the White House through security. And the gentleman is 6'9", about 275 pounds. And that's a fact. So he's our little magic to getting the turkeys into the White House.
Well, that I'm sure can be a pretty cumbersome task, so I bid you good luck. Thanksgiving is also right around the corner, and that's a very significant time for your industry. Just for a little perspective, in 2016, an estimated 736 million pounds of turkey was consumed during this one holiday alone. What does it mean to have a major holiday like this that really features your industry?
Well, it's no other protein like it. The turkey industry is very blessed to have the Thanksgiving holiday to enjoy our protein. Not only at Thanksgiving, turkey can be consumed 365 days a year. It's very nutritious, low in fat, very high in protein. So to a consumer looking for that in their diet, it's a wonderful industry to be a part of. But without a doubt, Adam, the Thanksgiving Day is a great time of the year to sit down and celebrate the many blessings or thanks we have as Americans. So we are blessed as a turkey industry to be able to supply that protein source on Thanksgiving Day.
We also learn as school children about the Pilgrims' first Thanksgiving, and any turkey enjoyed at that meal probably would have been wild. What differences exist when you compare a wild turkey to a bird that's domestically raised?
Yeah, that's a great question, and why I've not had a lot of wild turkey to compare to. I'd say the biggest difference is the breast meat today is what the turkey's number one valued product is. So we call them broad-breasted large white turkeys. So I would say today's domestic turkey raised has a much better breast meat profile and taste and texture and so on and so forth. So I'd say that's clearly the difference between a domesticated turkey versus a wild.
We are being joined by Carl Wittenberg, chairman of the National Turkey Federation and president of the Protein Alliance in Brewton, Minnesota. Carl, Minnesota is ranked number one in turkey production. What do you see as reasons for why this industry has really taken hold here like it has?
I believe Minnesota ranks number one for turkey production throughout the United States simply because of the corn and soybean supplies that we are plentiful with here in the state of Minnesota. I would also believe we're hard work, agricultural state, rurally, and it's a great way to diversify income to farmers who may be a soybean or a crop farmer, could also be raising turkeys. So I think it's really the foundation of Minnesota provides the grains that are very important to the nutrition of raising a turkey. And I think the climate that we live in, too, is very favorable. We do have four seasons, but our summers restrict from hot, humid weather, and turkeys enjoy a cooler environment. So I think those are the keys why Minnesota ranks number one.
That kind of took away much of the thunder of my next question, which are there any advantages to raising birds in this part of the country that, of course, other parts of the country don't quite have?
Yeah, the cooler summers and our spring season, fall season has its own dynamics, but they do last a little longer. The winters are the toughest ones, but today, you know, the turkeys are housed indoors. Range turkeys don't exist much anymore throughout Minnesota. We do have what we call sun porches spread throughout facilities, so there are turkeys that could have access to the outdoors if need be. But in the end, it's really about the environment. You're trying to minimize any of the risk from disease or predators or things that nature could challenge our turkeys with.
And that's a great segue into my next question. We've seen a growing cage-free movement happening within the chicken industry, so your poultry neighbor. This is a response to largely consumer sentiment and some marketing opportunities among large food companies. For those unfamiliar with your industry standards, how do turkey producers treat issues like adequate spacing for birds?
First off, there's no turkeys raised in cages. Again, turkeys are not raised in cages. They're raised in open, curtain-sided barns, typically with fresh air coming in, plenty of room to roam. So that doesn't become an issue for us with cage-free. There's third-party audits being performed, and within that is space and density. So to meet the audit, so let's say Walmart, for instance, wants a third-party animal audit, and there's a space requirement, you have to meet that. And those things are being tested all the time from the actual retailer, and it's consumer-driven. I think the consumer wants to know where their food's coming from and deserves to know. So, yeah, third-party audits has probably been the big movement in our industry.
You just touched upon it. You don't see too many free-range turkey operations or range turkey operations around here today. Do you feel this practice could make a comeback at some point if that consumer sentiment starts to shift and focuses on the turkey industry instead of the chicken industry?
There's a certain segment. There's a market out there today of people wanting a free-range, antibiotic-free or organic turkey, and we have those available to those consumers. But I think, as statistics go, the majority of consumers just want a safe, wholesome product, and they want to know where it comes from. And to have it confined in a building is fine because in the consumer's mind, I believe, they know that you as an industry are minimizing the risk of disease and predators and taking those out, giving them adequate space with proper food and water 24/7. So in the end, I think it's just educating the consumer and showing the transparency of what we're doing.
We're also seeing a bit of a struggle within agriculture over food labeling, and much of it comes in response to that GMO subject, but also antibiotics use by farmers raising livestock. What is this issue like in your industry?
Well, the antibiotic-free movement is a consumer-driven movement, in my belief, but we as farmers are very sensitive to what we give our turkeys. So I think it's a win-win. I think we as an industry need to be disciplined on any antibiotics that we're given. I don't think you want to use it as a crutch. So I believe we have come together to realize that let's minimize anything that we're putting in the turkey's body that's not needed. So that movement is true within our industry. And I think it's a balancing act right now, is just educating the consumer to what their needs are versus what the turkey's needs are.
And a turkey doesn't just receive an antibiotic unless it's sick.
That is correct, yes. So therapeutic antibiotics are no longer used and haven't been for quite some time. So there's not a regular diet of antibiotics in the feed or water. Those days are long gone. But there is a time when a turkey flock may need treatment with antibiotics. And it's at that time when veterinarians are on staff and they need to look and make that call. I still believe we need those drugs and antibiotics to care for the flocks properly.
Now, the turkey industry has largely recovered from a various bout with avian influenza not all that long ago. Looking back on this disease outbreak, what have producers learned that will better prepare themselves for something like this next time, if it does come around?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'd say in simple form is preparedness, that we today are probably better prepared. The state of Minnesota has always had a great animal disease control staff and preparedness. So I think we were ahead of the curve as a state, but it really comes down to being educated. And once this disease occurs and happens and it's real and you watch the animal suffer, it really enlightens you to be on your toes and be ready. So simple word is we'll be better prepared if it ever returns.
Have any changes been made to biosecurity at all?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, biosecurity is a word that gets talked about a lot, but does it actually get practiced? And I think with the HiPath AI occurred from 2015, we in the fowl industry, poultry, are much better at using biosecurity tactics. Not just talking about them, but actually using them and doing it religiously day in and day out.
Now, the University of Minnesota built a state-of-the-art poultry testing laboratory not overly far in Willmar, Minnesota, following the outbreak. Willmar is also located in the number one turkey county in the state. How much of a difference does it make having a facility like this located to a large turkey or poultry population?
Well, it makes total sense. I mean, if you're going to invest dollars and have a payback, you might as well put it right in the heart of where your industry is located. And Candiwai County is the perfect spot. So again, great resources, great staff. It was a great investment because it's right in the heart of our industry.
And of course, I would assume that means a possible quicker response if in fact something were to happen again in terms of AI.
Yeah, that's correct. So in preparedness, again, you're constantly taking samples from the turkey flocks and getting them tested. So having that location very close to where the majority of the turkeys are grown in the state of Minnesota, again, just common sense.
Carl, are there any places where people can go to get more information on the turkey industry or, you know, even follow your path to the White House?
Yeah, so Minnesota Turkey has a great website, and I would highly suggest anybody interested in following the presidential turkeys to the White House, check out minnesotaturkey.com. There's the National Turkey Federation. It's eatturkey.com, has a website. In addition to that, we're consuming this healthy protein in your diet. It's serveturkey.org, so you can get tons of recipe and great creative ideas for how to prepare turkey. So you've really got three resources right there.
Well, thank you very much, Carl, for joining us, and good luck with Washington, D.C.
Thank you, Adam.
That's Carl Wittenberg, chairman of the National Turkey Federation and president of the Protein Alliance in Brewton, Minnesota. That's going to do it for us on this edition of Rural Perspectives Podcast, which is a production of Egg Country Farm Credit Services. To find out more about us, please visit www.eggcountry.com.